The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, New York Giants fans, and welcome to our show here. Welcome to our listeners on the Big Blue View Radio Network, to the Valentine's Views podcast, and to our viewers here on YouTube as we talk about the New York Giants' latest debacle, a 38-11 loss on Sunday to the Los Angeles Rams, which I said to my wife last night wasn't even as competitive as the final score indicated. Mm-hmm. And so we'll talk about that. Ed Valentine and Emily Iannacone of Big Blue View here to break it all down and commiserate about how miserable the Giants season is turning out. Em, how you doing? Have you recovered from this latest misadventure by the Giants?
Misadventure is a very good word for it. Not quite yet, but I'm hoping that talking through it will help a little bit.
Well, I don't know. You know, I suppose this turns into a therapy session, so it is what it is.
That's really right. Why we do this every Monday.
Sure. You know, we might just as well. Listen, we have to start here. And, you know, before we get into breaking down where the Giants go from here and how miserable it was, I know you were sitting in the stands yesterday, as you do every time there's a Giants home game.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have been pleasant. I think the stadium was maybe half full to begin with. Mm-hmm. There was hardly anybody left at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. And you got home and I asked you to write the Leonard Williams story. And I sat and I listened to Leonard Williams speak last night. And I was incredulous that Williams sat there and basically ripped into fans for booing the Giants, who just got embarrassed, haven't won a home game this year, have the worst record in football since 2017, mm-hmm. and have given fans who pay a lot of money, as you well know, absolutely nothing to feel good about. I mean, what recourse do fans have other than either booing or not showing up? So, I mean, just quickly, we start there. I mean, you know, your thoughts on Leonard Williams.
Right. As someone who was at the game yesterday, I didn't hear, you know, my dad told me on the way home that he heard Leonard Williams on the radio speaking. I didn't hear it until I got home. And so I spent the train ride processing what had just happened, processing just how low the whole game was as a whole. And then I listened to the Leonard Williams audio that you sent me, and it really, incredulous is a great word for it. I was shocked. I was shocked to hear it. He, you know, he says, I don't want to be hearing boos from our own fans. He says they do bother me, honestly. And then the line that really kind of got me is when he says, it doesn't matter what I think. I go out there and play football. I don't sit in the stands, so I can't see it from their perspective. And I was like, That's very hard to process. As just a human being in general, I think you should be able to put yourself in other people's shoes from time to time. Like you said, the Giants' record at home since 2017, they've won 9 home games. I mean, people have a right to be upset. I go every Sunday because I see my family every time. And that's really why we do it. We kept looking at each other yesterday and saying, well, at least it's a nice day out. And you know, my cousin left in the second half. I don't blame him at all. And then
that's usually what I say when I'm in the middle of a bad round of golf. Yeah.
Right. At least I'm outside and it's not raining or it's not cold. But like you said, the stadium already yesterday was not full when the game started. And it has still been nice out. So as it gets colder and colder up here in New York, I think Williams won't have to worry about the booze because there'll be empty seats.
I can't imagine that there's going to be a lot of people, you know, in the stands next Sunday, you know, when the Giants play the Panthers. And what is it, week 11, something like that, when the Giants honor Michael Strahan. And I think it's against the Eagles, and I feel bad for Strahan almost because he's going to get booed at his own ceremony because the stadium is going to be 3/4 filled with Eagles fans. So I feel awful for the guy because it's come to that, you know, 6 games into the season already.
Philadelphia especially is a tough game to be honoring someone like Michael Strahan. I mean, if the Giants were playing well, then he's your guy. He's going to fire everyone up and it'll just electrify the crowd. But I think by that point, the way this season is going, I don't really see that being a very, very interesting game. I mean, even the Eagles managed to beat the Panthers last week, and they lost to Tampa on Thursday night, but that was to be expected. And even the Eagles, my point, look better than the Giants do. And so by week 11, I see that trending the same direction. And it is a shame. And, you know, during halftime yesterday, they had the 10th year anniversary and they honored the 2011 team. And even that was kind of a weird feeling to see all of these players walk out and then, you know, all these players that you recognize, and then you see Eli and Coughlin at the end of the long row of people, and they're carrying the trophy. And it was almost sad thinking about how far removed we felt from that. And there's no sign of John Mara anywhere. Like it was just an interesting halftime ceremony. It was like joyous, but not at the same time.
If I was John Mara, I wouldn't have gone down on the field either, to be honest with you. He got booed the last time he was on the field, and it would have been worse this time. And I just don't blame him. And you know, the one thing that I wrote on Sunday, and I will admit that I was in a mood. I can't sit in the press box and continue to watch this awful, awful, you know, football week after week after week, and listen to Joe Judge talk about, well, it's about week to week progress and it's about getting better and on and on and on and next man up and all that stuff. Hello, Joe, you're 7-15 in 22 games. You've been outscored, I think, 82-31 in the last 2 weeks. I think you've been outscored 68-30 something in 3 games at home. You're terrible. There are no signs of progress. There are no signs of week to week improvement. And I threw in a line in one of my stories last night that said, you know, watching the 2011 team, I said, you know, at least there was one good Giants team in the stadium.
That was clever.
I try once in a while, you know, it's like week after week, you see this. I've been writing about bad football for most of the last decade. And at some point you have to get creative and have a little fun with it, I suppose.
For sure. No, for
but
sure.
The critical question of the day though, Em, the critical question of the day when it comes to Leonard Williams, were you booing?
I was not outwardly booing. I was
outwardly booing.
I
internally booing.
I suppose it was a bit more internal. I mean, I just left. I think at that point when all of the fans started booing was really at the end of the third quarter when, you know, it just became clearer and clearer that this game was out of hand. And that's.
Now, I did write down in my notes, Em. I did write down in my notes that the booing started in the second quarter.
Okay.
The booing started in the second quarter.
I see you corrected.
When did you leave? When did you head for the exits?
I headed toward the exits at the end of the third quarter. Yeah.
Which is probably about the time that Daniel Jones should have headed for the bench.
Yes.
And I fail to understand what Joe Judge was doing, leaving Daniel Jones in that game to simply do nothing but take a beating. He said after the game, he said, I understood the flow of the game and we're going to compete for 60 minutes. But I'm sorry, Joe, you have 12 more games to play. You're just getting your quarterback beat up. You're lessening your chances to do anything in those 12 games by increasing the possibility that your offensive line, which was playing its worst game of the year, is going to get this quarterback broken.
Right.
I didn't understand that at all.
No. And we said last week that the offensive line has, all things considered, really managed to step up.
Until Sunday, it had. I mean, at least pass blocking wise, it had. But Sunday was awful.
Right. Sunday was terrible. And by the end of the game, you know, Judge had taken out at least two of the starting linemen, and Jones was still in. And I believe that the Giants called for Jones to sneak the ball twice in the game, on the fourth and one, and on another play, and it was just confusing. I already was a little hesitant going into the game, knowing you have Aaron Donald on the other side. That's scary on a good day. And Jones was full clear, ready to go. Cause we saw him look shaky standing up last week. And I'm, you know, thinking long term, I was already uncertain about this decision in a game where the Giants realistically already had very low chances of winning. And then as the game progressed with taking out some of these starting linemen, just some of the play calls, I just felt like Jones's health was not a priority whatsoever.
Yeah. You know, I looked at it and once he was cleared by the NFL's independent neurologist, he was going to play. That's the way that it is. If the NFL says he's cleared, if the NFL says he's through the concussion, the guy's going to play. But at some point, get him out of there for his own safety. There's just no point in leaving the guy in there to do nothing but take a beating when it's 38-3. I mean, what are you proving? And what is this macho, we're going to compete for 60 minutes nonsense? The game is over and you're putting your best quarterback, you're putting the guy you're trying to build your franchise around, you're putting him at risk. And I just don't get it.
Right. Judge said after the game, we're going to compete for 60 minutes. He also said, he talked about his halftime speech and he said a lot about, I wanted to see who was going to finish the game. And I wanted to see what type of fight some of these guys had left. And I think it is language like that that can actually be really harmful for a team, because we also heard it echoed in Leonard Williams' postgame comments too. He kept saying things like, we finished the game. I'm really proud of the fight these guys have. And I'm listening like this wasn't fight. This doesn't really count as fight. There's a way to do that that is strategic and that is actually working towards a goal. And I think Judge kind of promoted that language about competing for 60 minutes, but that involves competing for 60 minutes in a smart way and keeping Jones in for that entire game, knowing how the rest of the season is going to go, which now to me really becomes a season about evaluating Daniel Jones and his future in New York. This isn't really a season in which the Giants are trying to make a playoff push. This is about evaluating Jones. So eventually you have to kind of restructure your priorities and realize that fighting is also a long-term goal. It's not going to happen in these 60 minutes on this field anymore. And I just feel like he pushed something that wasn't necessary yesterday.
Well, I think, you know, as we talk about it, Joe Judge is not the first NFL coach to make a decision or make a mistake like this. And, you know, the issue becomes not just Judge, but NFL coaches in general. At some point, you have to be willing to admit defeat. You have to be willing to see the big picture. You have to be willing to see the risk that you're taking. You have to be willing to see next week, next month, next year. Where are you going and what are you trying to accomplish? Not this macho, we're going to fight for 60 minutes. Who are you fighting against? You're fighting against the Rams backups?
Right.
What's the point? You're fighting against the Rams backups and you still can't block them. And your quarterback is still taking hits. And it wasn't necessary. And I have been a Joe Judge supporter. You know, all of last year, I was a Joe Judge supporter. I still believe Joe can be a quality head coach. Mm-hmm. And yet I really, really think that Joe needs to really look in the mirror and really examine some of what's going on with this football team and some of his own culpability in it. Mm-hmm. And I'm beginning to wonder if Joe is the long-term answer. I don't want to go there because the Giants have, they got less than 2 years out of Ben McAdoo.
Right.
They got 2 years out of Pat Shurmur. Mm-hmm. You can't go anywhere. You can't continue to recycle head coaches every 2 years, mm-hmm. and eventually, you know, turn something into a winning, sustainable program. You just can't do it. I don't want this to get to the point where the Giants are convinced that they have to not only remove Dave Gettleman, who I'm not even sure that's worth talking about because there's really at this point, there's no chance under the sun that Dave Gettleman can be the Giants general manager beyond the end of this season. There's just no chance. And whether you have to sweep Judge out with him, you know, I don't want to see that. I think that Joe can be a good head coach. I just really think that Joe needs to look in the mirror and honestly assess, you know, his own role, mm-hmm. in the mess that the Giants are right now.
Right. I completely agree. Talking about Gettleman for longer than 30 seconds is really not even worth our time because that's obvious. That is obvious. And like I said, I think the rest of the season is about evaluating Jones and also evaluating Judge now, because it does seem crazy that the Giants would fire their third head coach in 2 years. It's particularly sad after seeing, you know, Tom Coughlin at the stadium yesterday. It's sad that we lack that same stability and consistency and leadership. We haven't really seen that in what feels like a very long time in New York. So I think it does become about evaluating Judge, whose personality and mindset is also something that I was really attracted to in the beginning as well. I felt like he was kind of fighting for the fans in New York. I felt like he was tough and willing to really, really work. But I agree that in his post-game comments, it's so much about a silver lining, and it's so much about this, you know, finishing the game in the 60 minutes. And I agree with you. I'd almost feel better if he was up there at the podium and said something more along the lines of like, this is my fault. This is my responsibility, and we have to figure out how to turn it around.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned Coughlin, because as you were talking about that, Tom Coughlin, every single time that the Giants lost, every single time, and it happened more and more regularly, you know, toward the end of his coaching career with the Giants, every single time, he would stand up there and say, this is my fault. Mm-hmm. This is on me. Mm-hmm. Whether that's true or not, whether, you know, whatever it is, Tom Coughlin stood up there and accepted responsibility. Eli Manning stood up there, whether mistakes and interceptions and fumbles and blowouts and everything were his responsibility or not. He stood up there and said, this offensive performance is on me. He said, that interception is my fault, whether a receiver fell down or ran the wrong route or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see that kind of accountability. The first thing Joe says every single time is, it wasn't good enough, but there were things to build on. I saw signs of improvement, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I can't take it anymore. Just once stand up there and say, this is my fault. This is not acceptable. You know, we have to do better. The players are not performing well enough, you know, and just express some frustration. The thing that bothers me is, like, a couple of weeks ago, Joe, as he got down from the podium, he kind of looked at everybody, and I think the Giants were 0-3 at that point, and he said, we're going to be all right. It's all right. We're okay. No, Joe, you're not okay. You're now 1-5. Your season is lost. You know, pretty much as far as wins and losses, nothing matters the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. What matters is, as you said, I'm evaluating Daniel Jones and evaluating players to keep and not keep. And it's just sad that, you know, we're not even into November. Yeah. And here we are again.
Right.
So I just want to see Joe just once stand up there and not sort of, as you said, look for the silver lining and, oh, it's okay. We'll come back. We'll make some progress. We'll check the film. We've got a lot more opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, for crying out loud, at least sound like it matters. Sound like you recognize the fact that your season is blown up already.
Right. I actually, this makes me think a lot of Lions head coach Dan Campbell, who cried last week after the Lions fell to 0-5 on the season. And he cried, which is wild, obviously made headlines and is really unexpected in so many countless ways. But I can't help but think about it. Because it's a vulnerability that we really do not see from Judge. He has such a hard exterior that I think with a stronger team, a more grounded team would work, would really emphasize this need he feels to fight through 60 minutes and to work hard the entire game. Maybe that works eventually, but right now this hard exterior kind of eliminates any, like you said, any accountability. There's no one standing up there and taking responsibility. And I think that trickles down. I think you hear that in the post-game quotes from other players. I think you hear that in Leonard Williams being mad at fans for booing. Even Daniel Jones, who really never says a lot of anything, you know, in his post-game press conferences, in any press conference, it's a lot of platitudes. You know, I understand that he can't go up there and he's not going to say anything that's really headline worthy. I understand why he does that, but there's still a lack of accountability all around and a lack of feeling like just like you care about it. And I just think obviously it would stun me to see Joe Judge crying at the podium, but at least, you know, Dan Campbell cares a lot. And I believe that Joe Judge does somewhere, but we don't see it, and we're not going to see it in platitudes either. We need some real answers, some real accountability, and maybe even some real vulnerability.
I mean, obviously Joe cares, and you know, a post game tirade isn't going to change the results and all of that. I just at some point you have to recognize that that talking about improvement and talking about getting better and talking about going back to the film and all of those things are, at some point it becomes just words, and at some point it's just not good enough, and at some point it begins to damage your own credibility. And that's the problem. Is I think we're at a point with Joe where if something doesn't change, he's beginning to damage his own credibility.
Right. I think so too. Cause he is, at the end of the day, he still is a first year head coach. This is the, not first year, first time, excuse me. So this is the first time he's doing this. And so while, you know, John Mara spoke highly of him, and while he comes from a Saban Belichick tree, and there's lots of reasons to be hopeful, I agree with you. I don't think that Joe Judge can't do this. He needs to accept that he also has things to learn about it too. Like anyone who does something for the first time, and that's okay. We just aren't really seeing a lot of that. And these Giants have also been completely riddled by injuries. That hasn't helped at all. I mean, Kadarius Toney was in the game for like 8 plays, I think, yesterday, and then he was gone. It has been a difficult season already, and I give him that. Everyone gets bitten by the injury bug, and it's the Giants. But I don't know. There hasn't been much to hope for. I feel like once we got to the second, third quarters yesterday, it was just no longer a game. Jones started to look like his old self with the 2 fumbles and the 3 interceptions. It's alarming because you wonder, can he consistently be a franchise quarterback? He looked really good against the Saints, a little shaky against the Cowboys before getting injured, and then really fell back this past week. And so there's just a lack of consistency across the board, even in the players who are healthy. That makes it difficult for any team to win right now.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Injuries, we have to talk about that a little bit. Injuries are obviously part of what's going on with the Giants. No team can lose a star running back like Saquon Barkley, a star wide receiver like Kenny Golladay, another star receiver like Kadarius Toney, their best offensive lineman in Andrew Thomas, two other starting offensive linemen in, you know, Nick Gates and Shane Lemieux, a couple of other complementary, you know, depth players who were playing snaps and being useful to the Giants in, you know, rookie cornerback Rodarius Williams and yesterday in, kickoff returner and wide receiver, you know, CJ Board. No team can lose players at that rate and not be affected by that and not have their performance drop off. But when I look at this team, that doesn't excuse looking like you had no plan once Kadarius Toney got hurt, looking like the only plan of the day was to throw the ball to Kadarius Toney because he played 6 plays. They threw him the ball 3 times. Once he went out of the game, they had looked like they had no plan. The fact that Blake Martinez is out for the year doesn't excuse the fact that a secondary that was supposed to be really good can't cover anybody. They can't play man-to-man defense. They look like they have no idea where they're going or what their responsibilities are when they're in zone. Mm-hmm. You have You have linebackers out there wide, you know, lined up one-on-one in coverage on running backs. You have Jabril Peppers, who should probably be a linebacker, trying to cover Cooper Kupp in the slot. Mm-hmm. You know, who's one of the best slot receivers in the game. You know, that's never going to work. You have Xavier McKinney, who made a couple of interceptions yesterday. Granted, unfortunately, neither one of them had any impact on the game, because one was in the fourth quarter and the other one was the last play of the first half. Mm-hmm. You have Xavier McKinney playing deep safety, lined up 25 yards off the ball, which means you're basically playing 10 on 11. Mm-hmm. You know, how does a guy make plays when he's lined up 25 yards off the ball? You know, the injuries don't excuse the way that the personnel is being used. It doesn't excuse two quarterback sneaks with a guy who just came off a concussion, mm-hmm. who's staring at Aaron Donald across the line of scrimmage. It doesn't excuse a decision to go for a fourth down on your own 41-yard line when you've refused all season long to go for fourth and shorts inside an opponent's 40. You know, it doesn't excuse a third down running play, a third and short running play when you can't block, where you, again, run the ball straight up the middle at Aaron Donald, who's a future Hall of Famer. It doesn't excuse some of the way that this personnel is being used and some of the dreadful mistakes that the Giants make, and the fact that they just look like, you know, they're just throwing darts at the wall every week and don't really have a plan.
Right. I think that injuries are something that no team obviously can control. Unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about that. But like you said, there are other things you can control. You can control the play calling, and you can control players' preparation. Obviously, all of the injuries have exposed the lack of depth on this Giants team, which is something that, especially on the offensive line, we were already worried about going into the season. The secondary is much more confusing, though. That was supposed to be our strongest unit, arguably. And that has not been the case whatsoever. So there's a lot of reasons still that this team could have like small glimmers of success, or just small positive things that are going the right direction. And that still just has not been the case. It's a decision making. It's a play calling thing. You know, you got to control the controllables, and it just feels like even the decisions the Giants coaching staff has had the ability to make have just been kind of confusing.
It's a use of personnel thing too. I was sitting next to Patty Traina in the press box yesterday, Em, and I know you know Patty pretty well. And one of the things we were talking about is, look, when Xavier McKinney, for example, who I mentioned a few minutes ago, Xavier McKinney, when he came back last year, when he played well at the end of the season, mm-hmm. okay, what did the Giants do? They had Logan Ryan play the deep safety. They moved Xavier McKinney down, played Xavier McKinney in the slot. They had Jabril Peppers, when he was healthy, playing a lot of pseudo linebacker mm-hmm. type deal. Have we seen that yet this year? We haven't seen that at all. Yeah. Why are players not being utilized in ways that we know that they've been successful? You know, I looked at Leonard Williams, and we picked on Williams a little bit. But if you go and you look at Pro Football Focus, you look at the snaps played category, you look at what the Giants did with Leonard Williams last year. He moved all over the line. He was on the right side. He was on the left side. He played both ends. He moved all over the line. He has been stationed almost consistently in the same spot all season. He's been at that right defensive end, play after play after play, and which means you're not using one of his best assets, which is his versatility and his ability to move around. And you're not doing the best you can do to create those matchups. And, you know, we're picking on the defense too, you know, here, but it also, you know, goes to the offense as well. You know, we talked about some of those play calls. I just feel like I thought this was a really good coaching staff a year ago. I was really optimistic about this group that Joe Judge had put together. I'm just shaking my head this year, you know, going, you know, what is going on? Why are they not using the personnel that they have in ways where we've seen them succeed in the past? I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very confusing, and it's easier to judge the offense because of all of the injuries. The defense, I think, is even more puzzling though, because they essentially returned all of the same guys. Leonard Williams says that after the game. He's like, these are the same guys as last year. You know, I shouldn't compare to last year, but these are the same guys. And it's Patrick Graham's second year as the defensive coordinator. You just think that would be stronger. And you're right. It's surprising that they're not applying just these same, they're not taking advantage of players' versatility, which is really so much of the reason why you keep players on the roster, is for situations like this where you need people to step up. Obviously, Blake Martinez is a huge blow to the defense, but other than that, it looks really similar to last year. And that was our strong, it was strong. It actually kept us in games. It was our offense that then couldn't score points and help us actually win those games. But it's just been confusing. I feel like last season we talked all of the time about rotating. We kept saying rotation here, someone's in here. Oh, now so-and-so flipped to this position and now so-and-so moved here to replace him. And we are just not seeing any of that creativity, any of that messing around and moving players around. And we need it. We actually need it. Last year, we almost maybe didn't. We could have kind of operated under normal circumstances because there weren't so many injuries. But this year, that's not the case. And maybe you're limiting players by kind of keeping them just stuck in one position. And so it's just confusing. I mean, it's something that the coaching staff has proved it can do, and yet it's not doing it.
And what we're left with, Em, is Giants are 1-5. Trade deadline is 2 weeks away. The draft is however many months away. And we're left in, all right, let's talk about what this team's going to look like in 2022. And we have to talk about that trade deadline. I think that the Giants, I wrote it the other day, the Giants have to be sellers. I think there's probably four or five guys who they have to say, look, if we get a decent offer for Evan Engram, who probably should have been traded long ago and doesn't have the value that doesn't have the value at this point that he would have had a year and a half ago. You've got to look at Lorenzo Carter. You've got to look at Jabril Peppers in the last year of his contract. I mean, I'm sorry. I love Jabril, but Jabril's not going to be a Giant next year. I can't see giving him big money to come back next year. Mm-hmm. You've got to look at James Bradbury, who carries a 20-something million dollar cap hit next year. Yeah. If somebody's willing to take that off your hands, you almost have to do it.
Yeah.
You have to look at Darius Slayton. Shoot, I hate the thought, but if somebody's willing to give you a second or third round draft pick for the guy, you probably have to look at moving Sterling Shepard.
Yeah.
You know, I hate the thought of doing that too, but the one guy that I would not move right now, I would seriously consider, you know, having a long conversation about in the off season and deciding what you want to do, because I can't see giving him a long-term contract at this point, is Saquon Barkley. But I cannot see moving him in the next 2 weeks, because right now he's hurt again. He missed all of last year. Right now he has no value. Right now you'd be selling low.
Yeah.
my thought on Barkley is get him healthy, get him back for the second half of the season, let him rebuild some value.
That's true.
And then if you make the decision that you can't give him a second contract, then let your new general manager go out and start yet another rebuild by figuring out what he can get for Barkley.
Right. I absolutely agree. I was going to ask you what you thought about Barkley as you were listing all of the players. I think that they definitely need to be sellers. I think in their right mind, they can't sign Barkley to a long-term contract. It's, you know, again, can't control the injuries, and I'm sure Barkley is extremely frustrated by it, but unfortunately for the Giants, you know, we've talked about this on previous podcasts. He hasn't been consistently healthy. And so it's hard to really evaluate him, and it's hard to know what kind of long-term impact he could have. And so spending that type of money on him also just feels irresponsible, but largely, I agree. I think the Giants need to start thinking larger term. I think they need to come up with some opportunities. They need to either get rid of some players to create further opportunities that will hopefully just improve the team overall. There's been too many injuries, too much inconsistency. We acquired players in the offseason who have a history of injuries, and that's come back to bite us a little bit. And we've talked about that before, and I know you can't do anything about it, but we need players who can show up week after week, and we'll be accountable about that. And I think that's got to be the priority for the Giants moving forward.
Nobody wants to get hurt. Nobody tries to get hurt, Em, but we've talked about it before. Guys like Kenny Golladay, guys like Evan Engram, guys who have injury histories are going to continue to get injured. It's just fairly predictable. You know, even Nell Barkley at this point, it's 3 years in a row. So it's fairly predictable that, you know, past his prologue a little bit, I guess is what they say. And so in a lot of ways, it's predictable that, you know, that we're seeing some of the injuries that we're seeing anyway. Although, as you said, you can't control all of them. And it definitely has something to do with it has a lot to do with why the Giants are where they are. But the injuries that they've had didn't cost them the week two game against Washington, didn't cost them the week three game against Atlanta. Decisions that they made, plays that NFL players should make and didn't make, you know, cost them those games. And as bad as it looks right now, the Giants should still be 3-3.
Right. That's a great point. It's important to keep perspective on it, because the Washington game was a penalty by us that pushed the field goal back. And then, you know, then Dustin Hopkins was able to make the kick. The Atlanta game is a very winnable game. You know, we were able to bounce back against the Saints, but that was the second straight week of facing an inconsistent offense, and we did not dominate at all. We did not find the holes. We did not really assert ourselves and show that we deserve to win, but we could. We definitely could have. And it really came down to some decision making and just some poor plays and an inability to step up. And it's a shame, because this first half of the season were the games that we really needed to win in order to even have a shot at being in the conversation of a playoff push. These were must wins right out of the gate. And now we are just facing an uphill battle up ahead. I mean, we played the Rams this week. We have the Panthers this upcoming week. And then it gets even more difficult with teams like the Bucks and you know, defending Super Bowl champions. Like, it's almost laughable. And it's just a shame, because even if we were to sneak away one of those games, it doesn't really matter now, because we weren't able to win any of these other winnable games to start off the season.
Right. It shouldn't be what it is, Em. It shouldn't be what it is. I mean, you've had games lost that should have been won. Now you have injuries, you know, decimating the lineup and and making it impossible, you know, to compete against these better teams in the league, you know, so it's just a really disappointing mess because I was optimistic entering the season that not that the Giants were going to win 12 games, but that they would give us a competitive product this season. Hey, before we go, last question, key question. Are you going to be in your seat on Sunday?
That's a very, very good question. As of right now, I will be there. Yes. Gotta show up. I show up more than the Giants do.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
No, I'll be there. If my grandfather's going, I'm going. But that,
there you go.
That's the reason.
And your grandfather always goes.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So that's enough.
Does he bring a pillow so he can take a nap?
You know what's funny? I meant to say that earlier. I looked around at one point. I saw people napping. I'm not even kidding. There was a guy two rows behind me nodding off, like actually asleep. And then the other guy next to him had his eyes shut. I was like, this is dire.
Hey, at least they went to the stadium to take their naps.
That's true. That's true. At least they showed up and were there. But truly, the game was putting people to sleep. I can confirm that.
Wow. So hey, you know, when you show up on Sunday, you and your grandpa, just wave to the press box, all right?
I will. I always think about it.
All right. Em, thank you very, very much. Giants fans, thank you as always for listening. Please stay with Big Blue View all week for all of our Giants coverage. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Subscribe to us on all of your favorite podcast channels. Thank you very, very much, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.